Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Lamed Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We'll be beginning today's shiur on Daf Lamed Dalid, 12 lines from the top. You will notice a quote from the Mishnah. The Mishnah was back on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. Here the quote is Keturis Shel Shachar Hoisekrevo Bein Dam Li'Evorim. We'll be dealing with the order of different activities, different activities as relating to the Yom Kippur service, the activities that the Kohen Gadol is expected to do during the day. And if we glance back, if you have that, if you have access to it, then great. The Mishnah on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. The Mishnah had described the Kohen Gadol in the first stage of the day's activity of having slaughtered the Tomet Shel Shachar, the daily public sacrifice, which is a Korban Ola. He received the blood, and then it says in the Mishnah he went to offer the incense offering, the Keturis Shel Shachar. Following that, he then cleans the Neros, he cleans the candles of the golden candelabra, and after that, then he would then take the limbs of the Tomid and put them on the Mizbech and offer them. Now, the Mishnah, on the heels of that, of the order of events, the Mishnah points out a difference between the Keturis of the morning, the incense offering of the morning, versus the incense offering of the late afternoon. And that's the point that we're looking at right now. The incense offering of the morning, the Mishnah says, was offered between the Dam and the Evorim. In other words, he first took care of the Zrikas Adam, and before he comes to offer the limbs of the Korban, Dam and Evorim are both aspects of the sacrifice of the Tomid Shel Shachar. Between the two of them, he was going to offer the Ktoras. So our Gemara picks up on this point. Moni, the Gemara asks, who is the author of our Mishnah? We wrote above the line, you can see just before this, we wrote Dam, Ktoras, and Evorim. The order is the central point of this discussion. So the question right now is, who is the author of our Mishnah? E Rabbonon, if it is the Shita of the Rabbonon, well, their order of things is the Dam, and we wrote above the line, you can see the Dam, the Hatovas Chamesh Neros, the Ktores, and then Hatovas Shtei Neros. So the positioning of the Ktores was between the Neros cleaning. So if our Mishnah were according to the Rabbonon, then Bein Dam L'Neros Miboyale, the Ktores should have been positioned between the two sets of candle cleanings that take place. And we discussed this in our previous year, the issue of the splitting of the candle cleanings to a group of five and then the remaining two. But as far as the Rabbonon are concerned, the Ktoras is positioned between the Neros. And our Mishnah had the Ktoras positioned between the Dam and the Evorim. Okay, E Abba Shol, and if our Mishnah were authored by Abba Shol, Bein Neros Levorim Meboile, the Ktoras is positioned after he finishes the Neros and before he offers the Evorim. So that doesn't seem to resemble our Mishnah either. The Gemara answers, the Olam Rabbonon hi, our Mishnah is in accordance with the Rabbonon, Ubesidura lo ka mairi. The Mishnah is not being exact when it comes to the order of things. So that if you if you notice in the Mishnah, he would finish the dam. He finished the zrikas adam, and after the dam, he would take care of the ktores and the neros. See, the ktores is in the Mishnah featured in together with the neros, if you will. He does the ktores and then the neros, and then afterwards he does the evorim. Well, according to the Rabbanan, the ktores was between the neros. So our Gemara is answering here that the fact that the Rabbanan, when you get down to it on a very detailed and exact level, so the ktores is between the neros, so our Mishnah was not being exact. And in reporting that the ktores was before the neros, so it was before the, certainly it was before the completion of the neros, but the Mishnah wasn't giving you an exact positioning of the ktores where, and that's okay. Namely, our Mishnah can be authored by the Rabbanan, and our Mishnah wasn't being exact with regard to the positioning of the Torahs in the order of events. But on the other hand, we could say that the Mishnah wasn't a mistake or wasn't inaccurate either. It simply wasn't being exact. We continue in the Gemara. Vishel Beinu Arbaim Hoiso Krevo, the Torahs of the afternoon incense offering, was offered Bein Evorim L'Nesachim. This was also mentioned in the Mishnah on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. So that the order of events, as far as the afternoon is concerned, you had the Evorim, that's the limbs of the Tomid Shel Bein Arbayim, then the incense offering, and then the Nesachim. The Nesachim were the accompanying offerings, those offerings that accompany the Tomid Shel Bein Arbayim. Minohani Mimi, from where do we know this? In terms of the order, Amar Biochan, the Amar Kro, the pasuk says, "Keminchas haboker uchenisko taaseh." It means that the Tomid Shel Bein Arbayim shall be like the Minchas Erev. In other words, the Minchas Erev shall be like the Minchas haboker. Ma Minchas haboker k'toris k'idem l'nesachim, just like regarding the morning mincha offering, the ktores precedes the nesachim, and we wrote in the order just above this. So afkan, so too here in the afternoon, ktores kodemes l'nesachim, and that's what our Mishnah says. So we learn from this pasuk, minchas haboker uchenisko taaseh, that ktores comes before nesachim. The Gemara says, well, if you're going to maintain, or if you're going to learn afternoon from morning, so, well, let's go all the way then. Ima lahalon, if by the morning we say k'toris k'idemes le'evorim, and we saw that earlier, we mentioned that earlier, that the k'toris was before the evorim in the morning. So af kan, are you going to say the same thing by the Beinu Arbayim, Ketores Kedemes Levorim? And we're not saying that. We're saying the Evorim come before the Ketores. So what about the analogy to the morning that the Pasuk said, Kemin Chasaboker? So the Gemara answers, as far as the analogy that the Pasuk makes, Miksiv Ke'evoreh HaBoker, it doesn't say that the afternoon Korban is like the limbs of the morning Korban. Kemin Chasaboker Ksiv, which means keminchas haboker velo ke'evore haboker. In terms of the ktores mincha relationship, we compare them. In other words, we position the ktores relative to the mincha of the morning, but not relative to the evorim of the morning. And the result of that is that as far as the mincha ktores relationship, The mincha we say means the minchas nesachim, so the ktores in both cases comes before the nesachim. However, in terms of the evorim relationship, so the morning scenario has the evorim after the ktores, and the afternoon scenario has the evorim before the ktores. And again, just we're being a bit repetitious, but this is from the inference of the pasuk. In other words, the Pasuk said Kaminchas HaBoker. We create an analogy between Torahs and Nesachim, but not between the morning and the afternoon, but not with regard to the Evorei HaBoker. Tonu Rabbanan. We continue in the Gemara. We have a Pasuk by the Tomid. It says V'niskoi Revias Hahin. Now, this Pasuk appears in Dvarim, Perek, Chof, Bamidbar, that is. Let's correct ourselves again. The Pasuk is from Sefer Bamidbar, Perek, Chof, Ches, Pasuk, Zayin. And the Pasuk says, we have it included on the side of the Gemara, V'niskoi Revia Sahin, Lakeves Ho'echod, Bakoidesh, Asech Nesech Shechor, Lashem. The Pasuk, as we said, is in the context of the Tamidim. What we will see later in the Gemara is that which Tamid is being referred to in this Pasuk. So before we go further, let us glance at the Rashi toward the bottom, six lines up from the bottom. V'niskoi revi'asahin lakeves ho'echod, gabi Tamidim ksiv. The Pasuk is in the context of the Tamidim. We're talking about the Nesachim. Nesachim are the accompanying carbon, the accompanying meal and wine offering that come together with the animal. V'limeid al ho'echod shetoun nesachim. The Pasuk said, la'keves ho'echod. So that keves ho'echod needs nesachim umiu. Ho'echod, who, this keves ho'echod shel arvis. It's the afternoon carbon. Toha minei solik. Because just before this, reference had been made specifically to the afternoon carbon. Dechsiv li'elmine, before this it had said, V'esakeves hasheni taseh b'ino abayim. V'asiru so'efa so'ilus v'chulei o'ilas tomid o'asuya, etc. V'niskoi revi'a sahin. And the amount that's brought for the Nesachim is a quarter of a hin. That's an amount for the wine. The amount of wine brought together with the korban. So this pasuk, then, as far as we're understanding right now, is a pasuk referring to the tomid shel bein harabayim. So the source says v'niskoi revi'asahin. We're back in the Gemara. Yilmad shel shachris mishel arvis. We are to learn from the afternoon korban. Tomid shel bein harabayim, just like it has nesachim, so too the tomid shel shachar, the morning tomid, shall also have nesachim. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe has a different take on this. He says, "Arvis mishel shacharis." We're going to learn the opposite way, that the Pasuk is referring to the Tomid Shel Shachar and its Nesachim. And we're going to learn the afternoon Korban from the morning. So notice the difference. The Rabbanan say we're going to learn morning from afternoon, and Rebbe says we're going to learn afternoon from morning. Bishlamo, the Rabbanan, the Gemara continues, that the Rabbanan approach makes sense. Hai b'tomid shel bein harabayim ksiv. As we saw in the Rashi at the bottom of Amud Aleph, that the Pasuk is in the context of the afternoon Korban. Hello, Rebbe, my time. How does Rebbe see in this Pasuk, Perek Chof Ches, Pasuk Zayin, how does he see that it's referring to the morning sacrifice? Omar Rabo Bar Ulo Omar Kro. The Pasuk said, La Keves Ho Echod. Eizehu Keves Shenemar Boy Echod. Which sheep, in other words, which one of the tomids, you have the tomid shel shachar, tomid shel bein harabayim, in which one does the word echod appear? Hevi omer, is it tomid shel shachar? Regarding the tomid shel shachar, the posuk had said, es hakeves echod taaseh baboiker. It's another posuk. It says boker, morning. It says keves echod taaseh baboiker. So I know the word echod is an allusion to the morning tomid. So in this pasuk that the source opened up with, v'niskoi rivi sahin, that pasuk mentioned la keves ho echad, So I know, says Rebbe, that it's talking about the morning tumid, and that the morning tumid has a wine offering accompanying it. And Rebbe says, I'm going to say, same thing shall apply to the afternoon korban. V'rabbonon my echad, according to the Rabbonon, what do they make of that word echad? Answer, miyuchad shebedro, that the quality of the animal that you shall choose for your tumid offering must be the choicest in your flock. Edro is flock. For Rebbe, where does Rebbe learn the idea of having to choose a choice, the choicest animal? Mi umivchar nidorecha. From that pasuk, nafka. Mivchar nidorecha means from the choices of your animals you shall bring for your sacrifices. For Rabbanan, what do the Rabbanan say about that? And now we have two psukim for the same point according to the Rabbanan. You would have the word echad and Rebbe's pasuk umivchar nidorecha. So the Rabbanan say, yeah, I have two psukim and I need both. Chad b'chov v'chad b'nedova. One is regarding obligatory sacrifices and the other is with regard to voluntary sacrifices. That both kinds of sacrifices must be brought from animals that are of the choicest quality. Utsrichi, and I need to tell you both. In other words, if I would have told you just one category, I wouldn't have been able to figure out that the law applies to the other category as well. In other words, both the Nedova and Chova, each one respectively has their own special features, special descriptions that necessitate choosing the choicest animal. So, Rashi explains this on the second line from the top. Utsrichi yesh tzad noite. There's a side to consider. Shehanedova tzorech liapoisa, that the voluntary offering should be especially desirable. Kedei shetisratz l'dorin v'akbolas ponim, because you're bringing it as a voluntary gift. You're bringing it as a gift to the Almighty, and he should receive you through this gift, so to speak. And therefore, you've got to make it extra special. V'yesh sad noite lomar, and there's an aspect of shachoyva, the obligatory type sacrifice, and would tell us tzorech lifruah chovo mushlam, that it's an obligatory sacrifice. It's a debt that you have upon you. When you have to pay a debt, you have to pay it in the fullest way. So it's got to be the best kind of animal. That's with regard to a chovah. So that svora, that logic doesn't apply to a nedava. How would I know if I only had taught you by a chovah that it must be choice by a nedava as well? So therefore, I need two scriptural references. One for the chovah and one for the nedava. We continue in the Gemara. The Mishnah had said, Im hoya kohen gadol, Zokeinu istinis, if the Kohen Gadol was elderly or sensitive. So the Mishnah mentioned on Lamed Aleph that they would heat up water Erev Yom Kippur and add that to the mikveh. We're now going to see a slightly different approach to a case of a Kohen Gadol that needs heated water. Tanya, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, and before we continue we should point out on the side we have a topic heading. The topic of chimum hamayim, heating up the water, al yedei ashoshia shel barzel, through casting into the mikveh iron bars or iron blocks that were heated up. And the Gemara will raise a question. When you put heated iron, red hot iron, into cold water, it strengthens the iron. It's called mitzaref, alo mitzaref, and that is something that when you're forging iron, you're improving it, and as such, that would be in the category of a malacha, forbidden activity to do on Shabbos or Yom Kippur. How would that be allowed? And the Gemara will raise the suggestion that you're dealing with something that was a dover sheno miskaven. It's something that you did not have intention for. Your intention was to heat up or remove the chill from the mikveh. Your intention wasn't for strengthening the iron. The fact that the iron got strengthened is a byproduct of what you had intended. you had an intention for something that's quite permissible, removal of chil. The strengthening, which would be a forbidden action, if that is true, if you had intent for it, but you didn't have intention. And when it comes to the laws of Shabbos and Yom Tov, Maleches Machsheves Osr Torah, it is something, it's forbidden only if you had specific intent. That, of course, is a very broad statement regarding a very broad topic. We'll take a look now at the Gemara. Tanya, we have a Tanaic source, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Note that we've emphasized with a marking, a dashed underline on Rabbi Yehuda. We'll need to come back to this later. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Ashoshia shel barzel hoyu mechamin me'erev yom ha-kippurim umatilin l'soich tzonein kedei shetafig tzinoson. Ashoshia shel barzel, we'll call them blocks of barzel, of iron. They would heat up erev yom kippur. They would leave it in the fire through, but having put in the fire and keeping these metal, these iron bars in, or iron blocks in the fire from before Yom Kippur. And umatilin osnitzonin, they would cast them into the tzonin, into the chilled mikveh waters, kadesha tafig tzinosin, so to reduce the chill. And now the Gemara asks, well, how is that allowed? Bahalo mitzaref. By taking something that's very hot, or red hot iron, and putting it into cold water, that extreme sudden temperature change strengthens the iron. And that is a forbidden activity on Yom Kippur. So how is Rabbi Yehuda allowing that? Omer of Bevai. Rabbi Bevai says, Shelo higia litziruf. It's true that the metal, the iron was hot, but it didn't reach. Lo higia, it didn't reach the extreme heat level that upon sudden contact with the cold you would accomplish this strengthening. Once again, they were hot, but not sufficiently hot to achieve tziruf. So there's no problem. They weren't in violation of mitzaref. Mitzaref meaning strengthening. Abaye Omar Afilu Temo Shigia Letziruf. Abaye says it could be, we'll call that the worst case scenario, that the iron was red hot, and upon sudden contact with the cold water, it will become strengthened. However, Dover Shein Miskafein Mutter, an action done without intention, in other words, you did not have intention for the forbidden result. Your intention was for removing chill. The forbidden result was a byproduct. That's called Dover Shein Miskavein, and in the realm of Hilchus Shabbos and Hilchus Yom Kippur, this is of no concern. It doesn't bother us. It's allowed. So we see here that Abaye is explaining Shitas Rabbi Yehuda as Dovar She'ein Miskavin Mutter. Abaye, don't forget, is explaining Rabbi Yehuda. We're explaining the Tanaic source. And it opened up with Rabbi Yehuda. So Abaye is presenting Rabbi Yehuda saying Dovar She'ein Miskavin is Mutter. And that raises a question. And the question lasts a couple of lines. Umi Omar Abaye Hochi. Would Abaye have really said that the Dover Shein Miskavin is Mutter according to Rabbi Yehuda? The Ha Tanya. We have a Tanaic source. This source deals with a Bris Milah, and more specifically, it's circumcision of a baby that has tzaras in that particular location, on the foreskin of his male organ. There is a halacha in the Torah that if one is afflicted by tzaras, the famous, let's go, skin discoloration that's associated with tumah, it's a high level of defilement, that discolored skin, which constitutes the nega of tzaras, the Torah forbids one to actively remove it. The Torah forbids cutting it off. What is the din if, lo and behold, that nega is positioned exactly where the bris milah, where the foreskin removal is to take place? So the pasuk says besar oloso, and we learn afilu b'mokum sheish shom baheres ikotz divrei Rabbi Yoshia, that even if there happens to be a baheres, which is a form of tzaras, on that spot, cut it off in order to fulfill the mitzvah of circumcision. Vehavinon ba, and we ask Kraw Lomali, why do you have to cite a pasuk for something that should be obviously allowed anyway? Is it not a davar she'ein miskaven? The Torah forbids cutting off a tzaras. You don't have intention for doing that over here. Your intention is to fulfill the mitzvah of bris milah. The fact that a forbidden result takes place, but you didn't intend for that. So, by virtue of the fact that it's a dover shein miskaven, should that not be enough of a reason without needing scriptural license for performing this circumcision? So, in simple terms, what do you need a pasuk for? The Amar Rabbi Yehuda, the Amar Abaye, Abaye answers, I'll tell you, the Rabbi Yehuda, I need the pasuk for the sake of the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, Dover Dover Shein Miskavein, Osir. Rabbi Yehuda holds that Dover Shein Miskavein is Osir, and who is talking right now? It's Abaye. But what did Abaye say just a few lines up? Abaye said that in the case of the Tziruf, and he was interpreting Rabbi Yehuda, no problem with the Tziruf over there, because it's a Dover Shein Miskavein. Dover Shein is Gemuter, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And here the same Abaye is saying that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Dover Shein Miskavein is forbidden. The Gemara answers, "Hani mili b'chol haTorah kula." That dover shein miskaven is usur. That's true when you're dealing with isurim doiraisa, when you're dealing with Torah level prohibitions. The removal of a baheres, of a nega, from one's skin, if one has tzaras on his body, the Torah forbids its removal. So here you're dealing with a Torah level prohibition. Now, in order to justify the circumcision, you can't say it's just a dover shein miskaven because you're dealing with a Torah level area of prohibition, and we cannot allow the violation or the superseding of that particular prohibition by virtue of the principle of dover shein miskaven. Therefore, only because there is a pasuk am I allowed to cut off the baheres in order to fulfill the bris milah. That's true, b'chol haTorah kula. Aval hacha tziruf derabbanan hu. But here, we're dealing with the strengthening of the metal. In this case, the strengthening of metal under these circumstances, and this requires much more explanation than we're able to give right now. But here, the tziruf was something that is not a Torah-level prohibition. And as since it's not a Torah-level prohibition, we can allow it by virtue of the fact that it's a dover she'ein miskaven. The Tosfos over here, you can see, Hani mili bisur doraisa v'hocha tziruf durabonon. And he goes into a very long discussion on this topic, and it's something that is certainly quite worthwhile getting into. It's a very long Tosfos, and he deals with a topic that has very broad ramifications, and you'll see the length of this Tosfos continues to down most of Daf Lamed Hayom and Aleph. But for our purposes, we're going to leave it on a very simplistic level that the issue of the tziruf here is only within a rabbinic realm of prohibition, and therefore it's okay even according to Rabbi Yehuda based on dover shein miskaven. But when you're dealing with a Torah level issue, you cannot use dover shein miskaven as the basis of allowing something. That's shitas Rabbi Yehuda. The Mishnah. In this Mishnah, we continue, as all of the Mishnayos of Maseches Yumar, they're basically set up in, or sorry, all meaning most of the Mishnayos are set up in the order of events as they continue throughout Yom Kippur. So the previous Mishnah dealt with what he did after the first immersion, and we saw all the different activities that he did. And now we continue with what we call the Tevila Shnia. And on the side of our Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, Tevila Shnia. We're going to see in this Mishnah another point, Machlokes, Remeir v'chachom v'inyan, Shovyom, Shel Bigdei Lavana, Machlokes, Tanoyim, regarding the value or the cost, the expense of the linen clothing that he, the Kohen Gadol, wore on Yom Kippur. The Mishnah will make... will point out that there's a difference in price between the morning Big Day Lavan, namely the Big Day Lavan that he wore for the primary Yom Kippur activity of sprinkling the blood and the incense offering that he did in the morning of Yom Kippur, and then the Bein Harbayim, the later part of the day wearing of Big Day Lavan for the removal of the Kaf Umachto. That's the first pshat that Rashi gives. Let's now turn to the Mishnah. Heviu lebeis aparva. They brought the Kohen Gadol to that chamber, the chamber known as Beis Aparva, for his second immersion. Uva Kodesh Hoysa. This was in the... this had Kedushas Azora. Means it had the sanctity of the Azora. This is in contrast to the first immersion, which was done at a point above Shar HaMayim, which did not have Kedushas Azorah. Parsu Sadin Shel Butz Beino Levein Om. They spread out a linen sheet between the Kohen Gadol and the rest of the people. Kidesh Yodov Viraglov. He sanctified his hands through, that's washing his hands from the Kior. Uposhat, and removed his clothing. Rabbi Meir Omer, Poshat, Kidesh Yodov Viraglov. The order of events as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, you can see how we've marked with a dashed underline, according to the Chomim, the initial Kiddush Yodaim is while he's still clothed, and then he disrobes. According to Rabbi Meir, first he disrobes, and then is Mekadesh Yodav Raglov. Yorad V'Toval, Olav V'Nestapeg, he immerses in the mikveh, as we mentioned at the beginning of the Mishnah. Now he actually immerses, and Olav V'Nestapeg, he rises and dries himself off with cloth or towels. Heviu lo big day lovon, and they brought his white linen clothing, lovash, he wears, puts them on, the kidesh yodav raglov. And here you have another kidesh yodav raglov, and here there's no machlokas. Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan agree that at the second kiddush, he first clothes himself and then does the kidesh yodav raglov. Now the Mishnah deals with the cost or the value of the clothing. Pashachar hayolovish flusin shel shneim osar mona. Flusin is a reference to a country, a place where the linens there were of very high quality. So the morning linen clothing, the morning for Big Day Lavan that the Kohen Gadol wore, its value was 12 shneimosar mona, 12 mona. Beinu Arbayim, the afternoon linen clothing that he wore for the purpose of removing the kafumachta, the two kinds of pans that he had brought into the Kodesh Kodeshim and left them there after having done the incense offering. Now it's time to remove them, to take them out. So the Beinu Arbayim were Hinduin shel shmoina meos zuz, divrei Rabbi Meir. They were Hinduin, some explain is like the word Hindu or Indian. The Rashi makes reference to a land called Kush, and the Targum Yonis ben Uziel explains Kush as Hindua. Whatever, it's a place that they provided. There was linens that came from there, and they were 800 zuz. Now, 800 zuz is less than 12 mona. 12 mona might be, if I'm not mistaken, would be 1,200 zuz. That's Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir's presentation and value is 12 mona and then 800 zuz for the afternoon ones. V'chachomim omrim, b'shachar yoloi v'shel shmoinosir mona, the morning ones were, according to the Chachomim, 18 mona, not like Rabbi Meir's 12 mona, but this is much more 18 mona. And Ubein Arayim Shel Shneim Osir Mona, the afternoon ones were, again, less in value. There's no argument between Rabbeinu Chachamim regarding the relative values, namely the morning white clothing, according to both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, are worth more than the Beinu Arbaim, the afternoon ones. It's just that the value, according to the Chachamim, the morning ones were 18 and the afternoon ones were 12 mona. Hakol Shloshim mona. The Tana is kind enough to do the addition for us, as if it's too difficult for us to do it on our own. He says, well, all told, it's 30 mona. And of course, we're being a little sarcastic there. The Gemara will ask, why does the Tana have to spell out 30 mona? What, I can't add 18 and 12 on my own? The Gemara will have to deal with that. Elu Michel Tzibor. These amounts are the amounts that would be if you made the clothing from public funds. If he wanted to add to make even more expensive ones, he can do so, provided he pays out of pocket. As you can see, we've concluded the Mishnah, and on the next Omid, the Gemara will pick up explaining this Mishnah. But for us, this is a convenient pausing point. Before we conclude, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.